From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Stockton, California.
I live next door to Bob Saget.
Selma.
Rockridge.
Tracy, California.
Noe Valley.
Everywhere, I'm homeless.
Coming up, should Oakland implement a youth curfew?
Oakland's youth crime actually has gone down at a much more rapid pace over the past 10 years than cities that have curfews.
Then we'll follow two undocumented students on their path to their dream, a college education.
Education is, I guess, a way of connecting myself, not only to, like, California and the United States, but to the world.
And we hear the San Francisco Mime Troupe get vocal about challenging the status quo.
Do you believe in the idea that people can change the system?
Oh, hell yeah. That's otherwise there's no point in really being a citizen.
We're challenging the system today on Cross Currents. Oakland Police Chief Howard Jordan is again calling for a youth curfew as a way to reduce crime in the city. The idea is backed by Council President Larry Reed and Councilmember Ignacio de la Fuente. But the East Bay Express has published reports showing that youth curfews don't work. And the most recent data available from the California Department of Justice shows that felony youth crime had dropped substantially in Oakland, plummeting 26% from 2001 through 2010. I asked East Bay Express co-editor Robert Gammon what the curfew would do in practice.
Basically, it would outlaw kids, teens under the age of 18, from being out at night after 10 p.m. on weekdays and either 11 or midnight on the weekends. I don't think they've decided what time for the weekend yet.
When you talk about the studies on youth curfews, where have youth curfews actually been enacted?
Well, for example, Long Beach has a curfew. And former police chief Anthony Batts, when he was here in Oakland, he came to Oakland from Long Beach. But over the past decade, youth crime actually went up in Long Beach under its youth curfew. So it's not clear that that was successful at all. San Francisco has had a youth curfew for a long time, but the city's police department doesn't enforce it. And one of the reasons they don't is that they realize that enforcing it takes up a lot of police resources. A 2009 report from the Oakland Police Department estimated that arresting a youth for violating curfew could take up to 60 minutes of a police officer's time. The reason why is that they have to wait around for a parent or guardian to come get the youth or to take the youth home, and so it could take a long time. Or if they actually decide to arrest and process the youth, it could take 3 or 4 hours. So police departments have found that, you know, youth curfews are actually more trouble than they're worth.
And so why do you think this idea is so popular?
I think it has to do with, you know, people grasping for a way to deal with Oakland's crime problems. And also, I think that there's just this tendency among some adults to want to blame kids for problems like crime in their cities, even though the data don't back up those claims.
And in your article in the East Bay Express, you say teens are not causing the city's violent crime spike. Instead, it's adults who appear to be responsible.
Yes. I mean, if you look at the actual arrest data, youth only make up just 11% of the total arrests and felony crimes in 2010, which is the most recent year we have complete data. By contrast, adults represented 89%. So a youth curfew is really targeting the wrong groups. I mean, Oakland's problem is with adult crime. And, you know, it may be adults between the ages of 20 or 30, but it's still adults. And they wouldn't be affected at all by this curfew.
That's Robert Gammon, co-editor of the East Bay Express. You can find a link to his column at KALW.org, and you can find all of the East Bay Express stories at eastbayexpress.com. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan.
My parents forbade me from telling anybody about my situation, so I had to lie about why I could not do the things that others could do.
Last week, we heard from undocumented students in a rally at Grace Cathedral as they applied for a temporary legal status called deferred action. It's estimated that about 1.7 million young people who were brought into the country as children could benefit from President Obama's executive order. It will be the first time that many of these young people will have access to legal ID, work permits, and the ability to apply for public college scholarships. These young people are calling themselves Dreamers, and it's estimated that about 65,000 of them live in the Bay Area. KALW's Nina Nicole Morente spoke with two who recently graduated from Richmond High School. They told her about the paths they each took to get to graduation day.
As the Richmond Civic Center erupts with emotion, there's a familiar feeling of accomplishment in the air. In the crowd, there are two new graduates whose feelings of happiness mean much more than the earning of a high school diploma. It's a dream that almost didn't come true.
My name is Jorge Hernandez. I am 18 years old from Richmond High School.
My name is Juan Carlos Cano, and I am from Richmond, California, and I am 18 years old.
Are you undocumented, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, I'm also undocumented.
There's no way to know for sure how many other graduating seniors at Richmond are undocumented, but Jorge and Juan know that they aren't the only ones. These young people call themselves Dreamers. Jorge Hernandez moved to the United States with his family when he was 12 years old. They came by plane and overstayed their visas. He learned English within a year and quickly caught up to his age group in school, but life was difficult at home. Jorge's mother became disabled, and his father was diagnosed with diabetes during Jorge's freshman year. But Jorge says he didn't want to let these problems, or his legal status, faze him.
So, like, they tell me regardless of my status, I'm undocumented, AB 540. Regardless of that, I'm going to make it and become who I really want to be.
Me living here in the United States is a really big thing. Because, you know, I wasn't really even supposed to be here, you know. I was born in a different country. I was brought here, like, without my consent.
That's Juan Carlos Cano. He remembers coming to America around the age of 3.
I remember waking up in, like, the middle of the night and my mom telling me to, like, you know, to get up and, you know, get ready. I woke up with, like, adrenaline, you know, like, it was a shock. And we got on this bus that, you know, was the beginning towards our journey to the U.S.
Juan's feelings of coming here are somewhat dissonant. He appreciates his parents bringing him to the U.S., but the things he faced growing up in Richmond may have been more traumatizing than anyone expected.
The poverty, the violence, the crime and everything. She wanted me to get away from that, but, you know, arriving in Richmond, it was really about the same thing. It really affected me a lot.
He says he was pretty apathetic about school until after his freshman year, when he dealt with some major life changes.
I witnessed my best friend being shot because of a gang. He was mistaken for a different person. Mm-hmm. However, he got killed.
Then Juan transferred to Richmond High. In his junior year, Juan's father returned to Mexico and wasn't able to come back. He hasn't seen his father since December of 2011 and doesn't know when he'll see him again. Still, he talks to his dad on the phone often.
I talk to my dad about 3 times a week, maybe up to 5 times a week. I really like to talk to him because, you know, he's my father. He's been there for me as well as my mom.
While he was young, both parents encouraged Juan to continue in school so he could become the first college graduate in their family, even though he'd have to support himself through it all.
I work about 20 hours a week at local Burger King, and that's I have to work because that's how I sustain myself in transportation, clothing, food, and some of it goes to send you money to my dad.
Money is also a big concern for Jorge. With both of his parents unable to work full-time, poverty was always on the horizon. He and his family had to make big changes to their living situation in order to make ends meet.
Yeah, we've been living for, like, 2 years now, or 1 year, around that time, like, in a garage.
You what?
We lived in a garage, so, like, it's a small room, just all my parents and my sister, so we all sleep together in a room.
Jorge and his family eventually found a new place, but it's an example of the uncertainty that's part of daily life for undocumented students like Jorge and Juan. At Richmond High, the administration struggles to address the needs of its undocumented population. Administrators simply don't know who is legal or not. Jen Bender is an assistant principal.
We don't have the stats because we don't collect that. Right. We don't collect social security numbers. We don't ask if you're documented or not documented. What we have is anecdotal.
Bender thinks that in general, undocumented students find it hard to stay motivated. They're prone to drop out because diplomas don't immediately translate into paid work. And even when they succeed in school, their legal status can often hold them back.
We had a kid last year who earned a program to fly to the East Coast to go to school in one of the Ivy Leagues for the summer. But because he was undocumented, he had no government identification and so was not able to take that opportunity because he couldn't fly to the program. I mean, it's heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. These kids didn't choose when they were little to come here, you know, and the situation that they're in, and they're being held accountable to it.
All right, Jaycers.
Juan and Jorge decided to get involved in their community instead of letting their situations get them down.
I'm going to start the meeting.
At school, Jorge took on leadership positions, like in Richmond High's debate club, called the Junior States of America. And Juan led a club he founded himself, SMART, Students Moving and Rising Together. It provides resources to undocumented students at Richmond High. Juan decided to start the club after his first counseling appointment at school, when he first realized he was considered undocumented.
And at that moment, I didn't even know I was an undocumented person until they told me of the challenges that I was going to have to go through and what a rough journey I'm going to go through. And they explained briefly, like, what are the steps. Like, your opportunities are very limited. FAFSA is not available for you, Cal Grant. And ever since that, it inspired me to do my own research, which led me to being involved in my school.
Now, years later, there are more resources for undocumented students. AB 130, or what's called the California Dream Act, allows them to apply for merit-based scholarships. And AB 540 allows students to pay in-state tuition at California universities. Most recently, President Obama granted temporary legal status to young undocumented immigrants who meet certain criteria. These laws make the dream of college way more accessible for students like Juan and Jorge.
College is, it's kind of like my crutches to continue. Technically, I'm disabled with, not literally disabled, but I'm disabled in a way that I can't be part of society. Mm-hmm. So I'm sort of like isolated. But education is, I guess, a way of connecting myself to not only to like California, the United States, but to the world. Because it takes you to a lot of places. It takes you anywhere you want to be.
In their senior year, they each sent out multiple college applications.
I applied to 4 CSUs, 4 UCs, and 6 private or 7 privates.
I applied to a total of 17 colleges.
Wow.
So you want me to go through a list?
No, maybe just top the top ones.
Top. My top choice is Stanford University.
By late April, their work finally paid off. They received their college acceptance letters.
I'll be hopefully graduating with Cal 2016. He's a Cal student. Yeah, it's my final choice.
Jorge was also accepted into UC Berkeley, and both will be attending this fall. This is far from how things looked 3 years ago when Jorge and Juan just started to think about their futures. As salutatorian, Jorge was able to reflect on his journey to college in front of all of his peers on graduation day.
My success took faith and determination. I didn't know I was going to make it. I didn't know how. I didn't know who to talk to. I just knew I could do it.
And for the first time, both Jorge and Juan don't have to worry about hiding the truth about who they are.
I will always say I am undocumented and unafraid.
In Richmond, I'm Nina Nicole Morente for Cross Currents.
You can tell us about the path you took to graduation day at our Facebook page. We're KALW News. And if you're a dreamer, you can tell us your story on our tip line. It's 415-264-7106. Just leave us a message at this number, 415-264-7106. This is Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. And now it's time for Artery, cultural coverage that gets political. Some say President Obama's deferred action directive was a move to court the Latino vote. But all is fair in love and election year politics, right? Well, if there's anything that all colors of the political map can agree on, it's that big money is a big issue in this election. Since the U.S. Supreme Court made its decision in the Citizens United case, an unlimited amount of money is flowing into so-called super PACs that support political candidates, putting this election on the fast track to becoming the most expensive in history. The Supreme Court deemed it constitutional, but some believe it's undermining democracy in the U.S. The San Francisco Mime Troupe is among the most vocal of such critics. The troupe is in its 53rd season, and its current show is called For the Greater Good or The Last Election. The Mime Troupe is using satire and farce to address the role of money in politics, greedy bankers, jobless recovery, and the Occupy movement, just to name a few. KALW's Artemis Kunahoffs went to the premiere of the show in San Francisco's Dolores Park.
A sunny afternoon in Dolores Park usually attracts crowds of people in tank tops and flip-flops, making merry mayhem in honor of the sunshine. But today, it's not just about the good weather. Most eyes are centered on a group of actors about to put the American political system on display.
We can help the downtrodden capitalists and the pitiable billionaire, because when they succeed, we all succeed.
At the center of the story is a wealthy banker who claims to have done everything in his life for the common good, including stealing money.
Damn you, regulatory government! Strangle competition, punish success.
This is the San Francisco Mime Troupe. It is practically a city institution, known for its outspoken political commentary, performed in open spaces and always for free. The author and director of this melodrama is Michael Jean Sullivan. He believes that theater, and satire in particular, is a strong way to raise awareness around political issues of the day.
What we decided to do was push it to its extreme, to show, okay, this is what you're being shown every day, that these people are the makers of America, and they are the heroes.
And by these people, Sullivan means the infamous 1% of wealthy Americans.
And that Occupy and the revolutionaries and all these people are villains, so let's just do it completely that way and make it as ironic as possible to show up the contradictions and hypocrisy.
Revolution is just un-American. This country has enough wealth for everyone, as long as we don't try to share it.
The title of the show is For the Greater Good or The Lost Election. The Lost Election because Sullivan fears corporate money will forever change what it means to run for office.
Unlimited donations means that when is the next time we're going to have somebody who's just a person, you know? It's just going to be, like you said, the best patriots money can buy.
Well, let's look at the numbers. The latest campaign data shows that in July, Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney raised just over $100 million. That's about five times more than John McCain raised around this time in the last election. President Barack Obama and his supporters also have raised more, $23 million more than they did in June of 2008. And this is just 1 month. Political strategists agree that if a candidate can substantially outspend his or her opponent, victory is almost certain. Obama outspent McCain in 2008, George Bush outspent John Kerry in 2004, and Al Gore in 2000.
We are Citizens United. Power to the patricians!
Sullivan believes that a couple of years ago, right at the beginning of the recession, there was momentum building toward changing the system.
You know, the first impulse of the country was, of course, you know, those bastard capitalists and bankers and investment bankers and hedge fund managers. They've ruined this country. They've driven it, our economy, into a ditch.
But then the anger started to shift toward so-called big government, Sullivan says.
And this idea has reemerged. The Ayn Randian idea has reemerged of we have to take care of the best because they take care of us.
This is why the mime troupe tells its audience, if you don't like the world depicted on stage, go out and change it.
Will you agree to his insane idea?
We have to take back the country!
Well, this, I think, is the most honest discussion of the values and principles that our society, you know, needs to live by that you can find anywhere.
Jeff Myers was in the audience and has seen the troupe many times.
I think, you know, no theatrical group or broadcast media that does nearly as good a job to recognize where our issues really lie.
I agree with their politics.
Marcy Rose is from Los Angeles, and she is also a fan.
I think things definitely need to be changed. I think we need to hold them responsible for what's happened, and we haven't done it yet. And this is as good a way to communicate that as any I've seen. It's using humor, it's using consciousness, it's using sanity. Works for me.
It's no surprise that many audience members are supporters of the troupe's message. But are they ready for revolution?
Goodness, it sounds like you're talking revolution.
Well, I mean, revolution has been possible before, so it, in principle, can always be possible. I don't know whether it's around the corner.
Oliver Hurler is skeptical, and so is Daryl Tai.
I just don't think the country's going to be ready for a revolution. I think there are a lot of progressives, and I know a lot of progressives, but I don't think the progressives really believe in a revolution.
Harry Pariser thinks that the mime troupe is preaching to the converted.
The people who need to see this play aren't going to see the play. That's one of the biggest problems. And, you know, they didn't see the play, they would start getting angry or something and walk away.
Yeah. Who you're preaching to is the audience. The audience is self-selecting.
Again, mime troupe director Michael Jean Sullivan.
But we can't go into their homes, break into their houses, tie them to chairs, and do the show for them. Theater is always a self-selecting crowd.
Sullivan says the group's popularity and prestigious Tony Award bring more diverse crowds, and not all of them necessarily agree with the mime troupe.
We are performing in Ann Arbor, Michigan, in this huge theater, and one whole row of people got up and walked out. And we found out later it was a teacher who had brought her students because she thought we did silent mime. And when she found out how political the show was, she was worried she was going to be fired, so she had to take her students out of the theater.
In San Francisco's Dolores Park, no one seems to have left during the show. But the question remains, is this going to inspire real change, or is it just thoughtful entertainment?
We are the San Francisco Mime Troupe! Overthrowing capitalism one musical at a time!
For Cross Currents, I'm Artem Skonohaus in San Francisco.
The San Francisco Mime Troupe is performing for free in San Francisco's Dolores Park and all around the Bay Area until September 9th. We have a full list of showings at our website. It's klw.org. And that's also where you can subscribe to our new and improved podcast. And before we roll our credits, we thought we'd share our favorite press release ever of the day. I'm joined by executive editor Ben Trefney.
Hey, Holly.
Okay, so we get lots and lots of emailed press releases every day.
Every day. And some are interesting stories to follow up on.
And some are just silly.
Yeah, like this one, it's kind of both. Apparently, there's some iPhone app for pet owners called Kloof.com, and they surveyed about 1,000 people to find out what dog breeds made people seem more attractive.
Okay, I'll bite.
Well, they broke it down for men and women. And the top 5 dogs that make men seem sexy are... Number 5,
French Bulldog.
Number 4,
Siberian Husky.
Number 3,
Labrador Retriever.
Number 2,
Golden Retriever.
And number 1,
German Shepherd.
Okay, so those are the sexy making dogs for men.
That's right, and for all the single ladies, number 5,
Beagle.
Number 4,
Poodle.
Number 3,
Chihuahua.
Number 2,
Labrador Retriever.
And the top dog that made women more attractive?
Golden Retriever.
There you go.
There you have it.
And Holly, I was wondering, where's the love for the pug? And our managing editor, Martina Castro, said,
pugs make you instantly unattractive.
I'm sure she's just joking.
Yeah, I'm just joking. Kind of.
I like greyhounds.
That must be number 6.
All right, that's Ben Trefney and the best press release ever of the day. You've been listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. The team includes Hana Baba, Seth Samuel, Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Emily Gaddick, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Erica Mu, Leela Day, Artyom Skunahofs, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor, Martina Castro is our managing editor, and Ben Trefney is our executive editor. And thanks to our partners at the East Bay Express. You'll find them online at eastbayexpress.com. Emma Lee of the Emma Lee Project describes this music as the result of a serious romance with three of her musicians and a serious flirtation with three others. You can experience the result of these romances and flirtations at a free show Sunday at Perry's Silver Dollar Saloon in Fairfax from 4 to 7 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.
You got that smile like you've been dead before. You kind of look like you've been flat on the floor. Who was she who turned you into this metaphor?